Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here will not be, are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. The views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We're here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us a very special guest this evening, Ted Gunderson, and we're going to be talking about satanic cults in the United States. Now, before I do that, I just want to mention that this coming Saturday, here in the Monterey Bay area, Dave Emery is going to be talking at the Loudon Melson Center at 7 o'clock on Saturday evening. And if you've heard of him before on our program, you know he's a fascinating speaker. And, of course, we certainly hope that you'll seriously consider going to hear him. Also on Saturday at the Santa Cruz Bible Church there on Frederick Street, there's going to be a speaker. He's going to be at 3 o'clock in the student center. He's going to be talking on Islam. It'll be a George Grant, and if you need more information on that, why, certainly you can give us a call here at 1-800-544-8927. But right now, let's get to our special guest for this evening. You know, one of the things that really surprised me as I began looking into the background of some of the more popular and well-known killings here in this country, like, well, the Son of Sam killings, the David Berkowitz killings in New York. What you have never been told by the controlled media is that David Berkowitz was part of a satanic cult. And although he committed only two of the murders, everything was done to cover up the fact that there were other people involved with the rest of the murders. Manson also was involved with the same satanic cult. And the reason we're having Ted Gunderson with us this evening is because he helped work on that case. Ted is a retired FBI agent. Well, I'm really going to let him tell a little bit about himself. Ted, why don't you sort of introduce yourself to our listeners, tell them who you are, your background in law enforcement, and then how, in the years since you've retired, you've been involved in helping to investigate many of these satanic cults that exist in America today.
That's right, Dr. Stan, and it's a real pleasure to be on your show again. Just let me mention, I was in the FBI for 27 and a half years. I retired in 1979. At the time of my retirement, I was in charge of most of Southern California, actually the FBI Los Angeles Division. I had over 700 personnel under my command and a budget of $22.5 million. I was, believe it or not, after 27 and a half years, I was naive. I didn't know really what was going on behind the scenes. And my first major investigation as a private investigator after I retired was the Dr. Jeffrey R. McDonald case. And he's a former Green Beret doctor who was convicted of murdering his wife and two children at Fort Bragg on February 17, 1970. And he was sentenced to three consecutive life sentences in August of 1979. I entered the case in January 1980. I was contacted by the defense team. They said he was innocent. Will you investigate it? Well, long story short, on October 25th, 1980, some 10 months later, I obtained a signed confession from a girl named Helena Stokely, and she said that Dr. McDonald did not commit those crimes. It was committed by her satanic cult group. And I see we have music coming up in the background, so I'll finish my story after the music.
All right. And, of course, Captain McDonald is still in prison because there are very, very powerful people in this country who want to suppress the information about the satanic cult and, of course, its tie into the CIA and drug smuggling here in America. Fascinating story. You're going to really be fascinated by what you hear tonight. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Ted Gundersen, retired from the FBI, and he was called in then on this case that goes back to the 1970s about a Green Beret captain who was accused of and then convicted of killing his wife and two children. So you pick up the story there, Ted.
Well, so Alina Stokely told me that it was her satanic cult group that committed the murders. Manson murders had been exposed in August of 1969, and these murders were occurred in February 1970. The government claimed that Dr. McDonald had mimicked these crimes after the Manson murders, and of course Alina Stokely gave me a different story. She said that her satanic cult group was involved in distributing drugs up and down the East Coast. The drugs were being flown in military planes, and of course the CIA was involved, from Southeast Asia, in the plastic bags and the body cavities of the dead GIs, and they were being distributed up and down the East Coast by this satanic cult. The cult was, of course, there were people involved in the drug operation above the cult. Lena gave me, in talking to me, told me there were generals involved, military personnel, police officers, at least two attorneys in Fayetteville, North Carolina. And so as a result, the cult went in without the approval of the higher-ups of the drug operation, and the higher-ups in the drug operation knew that if there was an in-depth investigation of the cult that committed these murders, that it could expose the whole operation across the United States. The drugs were not only being flown into Fort Bragg, but also other military bases around the country. This, by the way, is Time Magazine, January 1, 1973. So I'm scratching my head, and I'm saying cults, satanic cults. Well, I don't know that much about that. And that was the beginning of my looking into the situation. I went public with the confession. I was on radio and TV. I was on, as a matter of fact, I was on CNN, debating Freddie Kassab, Dr. McDonald's father, stepfather, and stepfather of Colette, the wife. And people just came out of the woodwork from all directions, all parts of the country, and started telling me about satanic cults, said they were victims. And I'm saying to myself, well, if somebody in New York and somebody in California who had never met each other, and somebody in Texas and Nebraska and North and South Dakota and Washington State and Florida are all telling me the same basic story, they don't know each other, there must be something to this. And this is my wake-up call to the activity of the satanic cults today. Now,
we'll hold that thought right there, Ted, please.
Right.
All right, fine. And, of course, the idea that there are satanic cults in America that are being covered up by people at the highest levels of government, knowingly or unknowingly, and sometimes people just don't want to open a can of worms, but other times they really have to conceal this information. You know, it's all right to have chaplains in the military now that are Satanists, to have chaplains that are witches in the military. What does that suggest to you? Does that sound quite sane? Is it possible that David Berkowitz was part of a satanic cult and the Son of Sam murders were not at all as we've been told? There's a fascinating book out called The Ultimate Evil by Maury Terry, and we've interviewed him. And it's a fascinating story. Just try to get a copy of the book now. You can get one, but with great difficulty. As far as the CIA drug smuggling, the book is Kiss the Boys Goodbye by Monica Jensen Stevenson, who worked for 60 Minutes. She's married to William Stevenson, an internationally known author. And, of course, when she wrote her book, her husband thought she was crazy when she told him that the CIA was involved in drug smuggling during the Vietnamese War. And Stevenson invited a friend of his from MI5 or MI6 British intelligence over one evening and said, you know, my crazy wife thinks the CIA is involved in drug smuggling. And the fellow from British intelligence said, you mean you don't know the CIA? Everybody knows the CIA is involved in drug smuggling. And at that point, of course, Stevenson then helped his wife write the book. Try to get a copy of Kiss the Boys Goodbye. Actually, the publisher withdrew the copies of the book that were out in bookstores across America. Monica got the rights to the book back again. She moved up to Canada. She gave it to a Canadian printer. They printed it. Somebody bought up the printer and didn't accidentally, just accidentally, shredded 5,000 copies of kiss the boys goodbye. You see, we can't let the American people know the truth. We have all sorts of books on this, Into the Buzzsaw, the Drugging of America, Defrauding of America. We have a four-tape set on Is There Really a War on Drugs? And you'll hear many of the people involved telling you, of course there's not a war on drugs. The war is really on the American people and expanding government control and corrupting the people. And of course, this all ties into these satanic cults. And if you'd like the documentation of what we're saying, actually you can go into the Wilderness website, or from the Wilderness website, there's a link to the CIA site where the investigation of the CIA admitted CIA agents who were involved in smuggling drugs, and we actually have that. We can provide it for people if they need it. You need to understand what's really going on, and this must have been quite a revelation for you working for the FBI, wasn't it, Ted?
Boy, it was, like I say, I couldn't believe it at first. And then, of course, after I went public with the information, people came forward. Then, all of a sudden, I was receiving all kinds of phone calls, and I was receiving all kinds of documentation as to what was going on in America today. Now, you mentioned the book, The Ultimate Evil, by Maury Terry. Subsequently, after I obtained my confession from Alina Stokely, by the way, Alina died mysteriously in January 1983, Maury Terry, the author of the book The Ultimate Evil, called me and asked me to do some work on the Son of Sam case on the West Coast, because he had information that the Son of Sam was tied into the Process Church of the Final Judgment, and this is a cult that was born in London, England, in 1963-64, and the leaders of the cult, who were Robert Moore and Marianne McLean, moved into the United States and subsequently into Pasadena and various cities around the country. They changed their name to the Grimstones, and this was the group that was actively involved with the Son of Sams, and as you said, Manson was involved with them, and also Sam Berkowitz. But there was another individual named, they called him, at the time of the book, the hard copy was published, he was known as Charles Manson II. Between the time the first book was published, the hard copy, and the soft cover that came out later, I was able to identify him as a fellow named Bill Mincer. Now, this is all documented, by the way, doctor, so don't worry about a lawsuit. But Bill Mincer was a killer. He, right today, is serving time for having been convicted of murdering a Hollywood producer, actually from Long Island, named Roy Radin. Are you familiar with that case?
Yes, I am. In fact, I think it's covered in the latest issue of The Ultimate Evil.
That's right. It's in there. And Maury asked me to help him on the case. And one day, Maury and I went out to the site where Roy Radin's body was dumped, which was about 60 miles outside of Los Angeles. And we found, and by the way, Berkowitz had told Maury that there was a message that was left there.
And this was David Berkowitz, the Son of Sam killer, had put the message out. There was something left on the West Coast. It all tied in together, of course.
That's right. Well, at the murder site, they leave signs. In this particular instance, we found the Bible opened underneath a pine scrub tree to chapter 22, number 13. And, of course, that is, this is Isaiah 22:13, and here's what it is. And behold, joy and gladness, slain oxen and killing sheep, eating flesh and drinking wine, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we shall die. That was a subliminal message. Now, in the McDonald case, there were subliminal messages also. There was a headless doll left at the scene, unexplained. There were bird feathers, and a two-and-a-half-year-old child had 10 shallow ice pick wounds in her chest in the form of an S. And I asked Helena, I said, what does that stand for? She said, that stood for Satan.
So, well, of course, the police, nobody would believe this whole story?
No, of course not.
And, of course, after you actually had this, the videotaped and signed confession, and you took it to the authorities, what happened?
Well, we had a hearing, and, of course, I was on the witness stand for about probably an hour and a half, and the judge, who earlier during the trial had denied 24 out of 25 motions for the defense, but had granted, seven out of eight for the prosecution, ruled against us, even though I had a signed confession. Lena was on videotape, and he said that she was unreliable. But we found out later, Doctor, that Elena had been an informant for the police there in Fayetteville. And one of my associates, my partner who worked with me and helped me on the case, was a fellow named Prince Beasley. He told me that she was the best informant they ever had. She was responsible for the identification and conviction of several hundred drug dealers who came in and out of that base. Of course, this is a typical army town. And but anyway, she was not reliable as far as the court was concerned, as far as the McDonald case was concerned, and the witness and testimony at the trial. However, she was reliable enough to identify and be successful in the conviction of several hundred drug dealers. So,
now, did you ever try to appeal the case, or was it just
It was appealed. Yes, it was appealed. He was tried and convicted, and then I came up with a confession. And as a result of this, we had a hearing, and the judge turned us down. And then we appealed it to the next level, and they turned us down, and he's lost every appeal since then.
Well, I think, of course, really, it's so important that this information be concealed, because we can't have the American people know that there are really satanic cults in America, and they have protection from some of the highest people within the courts and our government.
Well, absolutely. Now, you know, I had an interesting experience here recently. Last March, of course, as a result of the work that I do, I have these people coming forward, as I said, from all over the United States. Last March, I was contacted by a production company out of Hollywood. They asked me if I would participate and help produce a show on human satanic sacrifices. And you have to understand, folks, that these cults are involved in the sacrifice of humans and animals on a regular basis. There are eight basic holidays through the year when they do commit these crimes. And some of the basic holidays are the summer solstice, which is June 21st, the winter solstice, which is around the Christmas time, December 22nd, 23rd. Halloween, of course, is one of the major holidays. And those major holidays, they sacrifice humans. And so I was asked by this production company in Hollywood if I would participate in and help them with the production, caption Satanic Human Sacrifices. So we produced a show. I was, as a matter of fact, I was in the hospital. I had to get out of the hospital against my doctor's orders and go to Salt Lake. I drove up there 500 miles from Las Vegas, which is where I live. I grabbed one of my survivors, a satanic adult survivor who's gotten out of the cult and is in hiding, and we produced that show. It was 2 days of filming, and the show was to be aired in October and November of this last year. It never aired. I called the production company in Hollywood. I said, why hasn't it aired? And they said, well, it's going to air in January or February because there was too graphic just before Christmas. Well, it still is. This is into February, the middle of February. They still haven't aired. And I predicted that that show would never air because, as you said, Doctor, they don't want this information to get out to the American people.
Well, we've talked to people. We, in fact, have a four-tape set on Satanism and Deliverance. A woman goes to our church who belonged to a satanic family, and she began to be ritually abused when she was 3 years of age. Fascinating, of course, a disheartening story, triumphant story, because of her belief in Jesus Christ, she was able to leave the cult and to heal the terrible things that had been done to her. We have a book called Bluebird. It's by a psychiatrist who deals with many of the victims of satanic ritual abuse and multiple personalities inflicted by it. People by the intelligence agencies of this country. It goes into the background, of course, of Operation Paperclip, where after the Second World War, the OSS and then the CIA brought many of the Nazi war criminals deeply involved in the occult into the United States to continue their macabre psychological studies and programs that had begun in Hitler's Germany. And, of course, they were fulfilled here. That's Operation Bluebird. It's available. We have a four-tape set on Satanism, Deliverance, a four-tape set on Aleister Crowley and his friends. Aleister Crowley was a Satanist, known as the most evil man in the world. He operated here throughout the world, involved with satanic sacrifices. He was thrown out of Italy because of child sacrifices. Do you think these things happen? Well, there's so much you're not going to hear from Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly. Our guest is Ted Gunderson, formerly with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and I had actually tracked down this book, The Ultimate Evil, by Maury Terry, and had read it through, and this is when I found I had no idea that Ted had been involved with this investigation, tying Manson into the process. And the process was a secret society operating here in the United States. There's another book, it's called The Family. There are two books written on the Manson murders. One is Helter Skelter, the other is The Family. And if you read the book on The Family, they will tell you all about the process, this secret British satanic society operating in the United States. And, of course, its founder, what was his name, Robert de Grimstead?
De Grimson, huh? Right.
De Grimson. Now, you say, well, why don't we read about this in The Enquirer, at least? Well, The Enquirer isn't going to tell you some of these stories either, because the American people are not to really understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a cultural and political and ideological battlefield. But it's behind this, there really are these satanic cults and satanic organizations, and they operate many times at the highest levels of our society. It was very interesting, as you read the book, The Ultimate Evil, they describe some of the ceremonies that have been seen by people who, one reason or another, were able to witness what happened and then escape with their lives. And here they are in their black robes and their black hoods and their torches and their pagan chanting. Why, sounds just like what happens in the Bohemian Grove or at the Skull and Bones meetings. In fact, there is in our four-tape set on Skull and Bones, you'll hear the description by somebody who witnessed one of their meetings, a Skull and Bones wedding, and the people in their black robes and their hoods and their torches and their pagan chanting. So people have to understand that what we're talking about is not imaginary, it's real. Because if we are to survive and we are to be able to stand against these forces of evil, we have to recognize what they are. Well, Ted, you've probably been marked for your contract on your life, haven't you?
Well, I have one on my life right now. I have a contract on my life because the work that I've been doing for the last 20-some years. And very frankly, I've in the past been very active on the lecture circuit. If I've had to cut back on that, I can't go out in public anymore. This contract came about last September, October. I had three of my informants tip me off and tell me about it. And so as a result, I'm basically holed up in my fifth floor condominium in Las Vegas, Nevada. Whenever I go out, I have to go out with, I'm accompanied by some of my friends and associates so that, you know, it's going to be what they're trying to do. They're trying to poison me or hit me with a dart or somehow because they want to eliminate me because of the work that I've done. And the exposure that I've made in the way of cults and other matters, including the 9/11 terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center, I have absolute documentation, chiseled in stone, backed up by postal date stamps, certified mail, that the FBI was furnished information about 9/11 on March the 20th of 2001, and they were told about the forthcoming attacks and given other information, and they did nothing with it. And so I have that. I've gone public with that. I passed my report on 9/11 out to 155 congressmen, senators, and also executive members of the branch. And that's mainly the reason for the hit on me right now. But in the past, not to get away from the cults, I've worked on not only the Jeffrey McDonald case, which was a high-profile case, probably the most high-profile case other than O.J. Simpson murders.
Hold that thought for just a minute. Sure. We have to get our other stations back online. Okay, fine. And so you were talking about the Jeffrey McDonald case and some of the other cases you've been involved with. What about the Williams case down in Atlanta, the supposed murder of all those boys? Was that just a single person involved, or was that also an example of satanic murderers?
Well, there's every indication that that's a satanic cult. What was his first name? Williams' first name.
Right.
What?
I don't know the first name.
Yeah, he wrote to me. He's still in prison, by the way. And he wrote to me a number of years ago, asked me if I'd help him with the case, and I couldn't help him. But there's every indication that was a cult murder also.
What do you think? Was he guilty, or was he involved?
Well, it's difficult for me. I'm asked that question about a lot of cases. Unless I really study the case and have first-hand knowledge, it's difficult for me to say guilty or not guilty. For example, on the McDonald case, I can say without any question the man is absolutely innocent, and there's a huge cover-up there because of the drugs, CIA Army drug operation. On the Williams case out of Atlanta, I'm not sure because I haven't studied the case that much, but I did work the McMartin case down in Los Angeles. You're familiar with that?
That was a McMartin child abuse case.
The child abuse case, right. And the children said that they were taken down. The parents had dropped them off, say, 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, come back and pick them up at 5. And the children said that they were taken down into tunnels under the school. There were adults chanting with robes. They sacrificed babies. They talked about sacrificing brown babies. Candles, the whole nine yards. And the authorities said, oh, no, there's nothing to that. And as a matter of fact, though the children also said they were taken through the tunnels up into a trap door, the triplex next door, placed in automobiles and prostituted, taken out and prostituted in the community. We're talking about 2-, 3-, 4-year-old children, preschool children. And so the authorities went out in 1987 looking for the tunnels. They said they couldn't find any. I had an opportunity in 1991 to gain access to the property. It had been given by the McMartin family to Danny Davis, the attorney, and he sold it to a contractor who was going to tear down the building and build an office building on the site. And I heard about it. I went over. I said, let me get on the property for 2 weeks, sir. And he said, well, if you assume liability and give me a contract that you will do that, I'll be glad to let you do this. So I did. We hired, some of the parents and I hired an archaeologist, Dr. Gary Stickle, UCLA, and we went and we found the tunnels. The kids talked about not only chanting and what they described as obviously satanic ceremonies, they said that they were taken up into the mountains. Well, one of the close friends of the McMartin family had a jet plane. There was Hawthorne Airport about 10 minutes away, and we feel that they were taken there. And I, by the way, we found the tunnels in the middle of the second trial with Ray Buckey, called the district attorney, and he refused to acknowledge the fact that there were tunnels there, refused to use the information in the trial. We also, before the trial began, I had a tip from an informant about an abandoned satanic site in Crestline. The kids said they were flown into the mountains. I went up to there, to the Crestline location, and I took pictures of the abandoned site. It was built on the side of the mountain, and there's no question about it. I called Lael Rubin, the prosecutor, on the case, and I said, I think I know where the kids were taken. I'd be glad to take the kids up there to show you where it is. They weren't interested. So that's just another case, another cover-up, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, then if I can talk a little bit about Bill Mentzer. Bill Mentzer was in the Ultimate Evil was Charles Manson II, as I said.
That's what they called him, because it was obvious he was a ruthless murderer.
Ruthless murderer. He was a contract killer. And I had a... Now, what I'm going to tell you now, Doctor, is all documented, so don't worry about a lawsuit, as we mentioned in the show here the other day. But I picked up information that a fellow named Dr. John P. Nichols was arranging for contract killings. And as a matter of fact, he was setting up a gambling operation on the Indian Reservation in Indio, California. And there was an Indian on the tribal council, Alvarez was his name, who was against the gambling on the reservation. And all of a sudden, Alvarez is gunned down along with two of his friends by unknown persons. I picked up information from an informant that Alvarez was murdered, and the contract was put out by Dr. John P. Nichols, and that he had brought up some gang members, motorcycle gang, satanic cult members from Phoenix, Arizona, to commit the murders. And of course, after that, the tribal council went along with Dr. Nichols. And so I went to the FBI with this story, and I said, this man is arranging for contract killings. They refused to do anything about it. I went to the Riverside County Sheriff's Office. And I hear music in the background again.
You do, and we'll be back in just a couple of moments here.
Sorry.
But of course, you've had the opportunity of being involved in many of these. I've known Ted for a long time, and if you begin reading the stories about these satanic cults, why, you'll always find that they usually go and get Ted Gunderson to help solve these mysteries. And I remember even when Ted Gunderson was on Think Focus on the Family talking about this some years ago. We'll be back in a few minutes right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Ted Gunderson, who was 27 and a half years with the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And, of course, when he completed his service, he was in charge of the Los Angeles office. Well, you were saying then that, of course, you went to the Riverside police or sheriffs with this story. And did they eventually go after this man who was putting out the contracts?
Well, their investigators started looking into it, and all of a sudden, he started developing information, and he was reassigned to stolen cars. And then I talked to the investigator after he was reassigned. He said he was contacted by two men in suits and told to back off, and he was concerned, and he was very much afraid of his life, and he resigned from the sheriff's office and went back to the East Coast and took a menial job back there in order to live, obviously. But the sheriff's office refused to investigate it. So what I did is I went to Sam Cross, who was the chief of police in NDO, and I said to Sam, and I knew Sam from my FBI experiences. This is after I was out of the FBI, of course. I said, Sam, you have a man in your territory, in your jurisdiction, who is arranging for contract killings. Are you going to let that happen? He said, no, sir. I'm not going to allow that to happen. So Sam sent an undercover police officer right out of training school with a body mic in to talk to Dr. John P. Nichols. And he recorded a request by Dr. Nichols to put a hit on five individuals. So they filed criminal charges on Dr. Nichols, and he was convicted of two counts. They dropped three, and he served like 18 months, sentenced to 3 years, I think it was, served 18 months. And this was in 1983, 84. And when he got out, he arranged with Bill Mentzer, Charles Manson II, mentioned in The Ultimate Evil, to come after me. He put a hit out on me. And I was, by that time, that would be 1986, and, you know, I said to myself one day, I've had enough cops and robbers in my life, and I decided to get out of the investigative field and went into the export-import business, which was a mistake, and lost everything that I ever accumulated in wealth, and not much, but I lost whatever I had in it. But anyway, I'm working in the export-import business out of Sherman Oaks, California, and I had a feeling I was being surveilled at night when I'd go home. All of a sudden, my daughter had to take a trip. She asked me to house-sit for a week, and then a friend of mine who was quite ill, his wife asked me if I'd come over to his house at night, because when he'd get up in the middle of the night, sometimes he'd fall and she couldn't get him back up. So I was 2 weeks away from where I was living out in Camarillo, California.
You're going to have to hold that thought. Okay. And we pulled the other stations right down.
Okay.
Go ahead and start. Ted is telling the story that the doctor who was putting out contract hits was eventually arrested, served 18 months in prison, went out, and of course once he was released, he put a contract out on Ted Gunderson, our guest tonight. And so Ted now has left the investigative business. He's trying to lead a more normal life, but he's constantly being surveilled. He's under surveillance. Obviously, the contract killers are ready to get him. Pick up the story from there, Ted.
Well, so what? It was kind of interesting because I was 2 weeks away from going home. I didn't go home for 2 weeks. And my business partner in the export-import business had gone to Argentina. And his wife, I live with him and his wife and his child. And I told his wife, Elena, I said, I called the night before, after I'd been gone for 2 weeks. The night was on Sunday night. I said, Elena, you know, I'm sorry I haven't been out to see you for 2 weeks. I guess you're okay. I'll be home tonight for sure. And I called around 8 o'clock. And I had, that week was the week that I house set for my daughter. She came home that evening. We started watching a movie. And by the time I finished watching the movie, it was 11 o'clock, and I had a 40-mile drive. So I called Elena at 11 o'clock, and I said, Elena, I won't be home tonight after all. And a few minutes after I called Elena, she was on the third floor. She heard somebody come in the first floor, and it's a triplex. And the dog just started wagging his tail, thinking it was me, and all of a sudden, the dog just goes wild. The door is closed to her bedroom. She gets her gun out, she goes to the telephone, and she can't use the phone because it's been disconnected downstairs. Well, anyway, that was about a little after 11, a short time after I made my call saying I'd be home for sure. And then 8 o'clock was that call, and then 11 o'clock I called and said I couldn't make it. And so the person that sat downstairs waiting for me to come home from 11 till about 2, and every once in a while he'd get up and walk around. The dog would go crazy. I find out later through one of my informants that was Bill Mensur. That was Charles Manson II. And Dr. John Nichols had hired Mensur to come after me. He, in the meantime, was out, by the way. And by the way, he's dead now.
The doctor or Mensur? They're both.
Well, Mensur's in jail.
Well, Mensur's in jail and the doctor's dead.
The doctor's dead. And what happened to Mensur is he murdered Roy Radin. And Roy Radin was a Hollywood producer who we mentioned earlier on the show.
Oh, he was somehow tied into the Manson killings, wasn't he?
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, Mensur definitely was, and also tied into the Berkowitz,
right.
Son of Sam.
Right.
Mensur was a professional killer. He'd served in Vietnam, and he was quite a rascal.
Well, now, was he a member of the Process, the Secret
yes.
Satanic Society?
He was a member of the Process Church, right, well, absolutely.
And for our listeners out there who want to check it out, two books. One is The Family, the story of the Manson killing. The other is, of course, The Ultimate Evil by Maury Terry. And the fact that you haven't heard about this, this sort of thing, simply is a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. So pick up the story there, Ted.
Well, and as a result, of course, I was able to, instead of Mensur getting me, I was able to, I basically had to, you know, go underground, go into hiding. And so then I knew that Mensur had killed Roy Radin. So I got a hold of my informant, and we went in and saw the district attorney, a fellow named Cohen. And we told him that Roy Radin, the producer out of Long Island, New York, had been murdered by Bill Mensur. And then they took it from there, and they investigated it. And Mensur and a woman named Lonnie Jacobs and a fellow named Lowe and another fellow from Argentina, who was their partner, and his name was Alex Marti. Alex Marti. Bill Mensur, Lonnie Jacobs, Alex Marti, and Robert Lowe. Lowe was the driver of the car. And what happened is Roy Radin was in a contract dispute with Lonnie Jacobs and also Bob Evans. Bob Evans was the famous producer who did Chinatown. And there was an argument over the contract. Lonnie Jacobs was involved in it, and she set up Roy Radin for dinner that night, and she had Bill Mensur and Alex Marti and Robert Lowe, and they took him out about 60 miles north of Los Angeles in a canyon and shot him with a shotgun.
And they shot him because of the contract dispute over the making of the film.
That's right.
Right.
And then Mensur put a stick of dynamite in his mouth and then set it off, and of course he was blown to smithereens. And then on, I forget the exact, I think it was June of 1983, it was about a month after this. By the way, he was murdered in May the 13th, 1983, which was a Friday. A beekeeper who had some bees out there in that canyon discovered Roy Radin's body, and he was identified as the producer and so on and so forth. And anyway, instead of Bill Mensur getting me, I was able to come up and put him in jail himself, and he's serving life without parole right at this time.
Well, this whole story is told in Maury Terry's book, The Ultimate Evil, so I at least I have some idea what they're talking about. I know for the listener out there it may be hard to get, but you can probably track down, I was able to get the book, The Ultimate Evil, I was able to get one recently by getting some people to search, and there are a few of them out with distributors. The book was recently reprinted last year, and suddenly all the copies disappeared. There are a few out there. Get the book, read it, The Ultimate Evil by Maury Terry. We'll tell you this story, the story of Charles Manson and the Process, tell you the story of the David Berkowitz, the Son of Sam killings and the Process. The Process is out there as a secret satanic cult. And, of course, you might ask, well, why don't we ever talk about that sort of thing? And as Ted said, you know, he helped to produce a video on this, and chances are it'll never see the light of day here in the United States.
Oh, no. Well, I had another case involving Satanism in the Midwest. There was a satanic cult group, and I've been investigating that too, with a fellow named John DeCamp out of Omaha and Lincoln, Nebraska, mainly out of Omaha. And in that case, they were taking children out of Boys Town and foster homes and orphanages, driving them in limousines to Sioux City, Iowa, 184 miles away, placing them in private jets and flying them to Washington, D.C. for sex orgy with a congressman. And that case broke in 1982, 83. Excuse me, the McMartin case broke in 82. That case broke in around 86, 87, I think.
And that's known as the Franklin cover-up.
The Franklin cover-up. And there's a book out on that called The Franklin Cover-up. It's a very good book. That's by John DeCamp.
Right.
And that involved, the kids there talked about Satanism also, and they talked about Men in Robes. They talked about snuff films. They talked about the Bohemian Grove right out there, not too far from where you are right now, Dr. Stan.
Now, what did they say about the Bohemian Grove? Were they used there? Did they take them out, some of them out
there?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, they were, the kids, Paul Benassi, there were 80 children. First of all, the Franklin Savings and Loan was raided by the IRS and the FBI. There were $40 million missing. And as a result of the publicity, there were 80 children came forward, and when they saw the pictures of these various people in the paper, and I told their parents that this man had sexually molested them. Of the 80, four gave statements. Two later recanted. The two who refused to recant, Alicia Owens and Paul Benassi, were tried for other crimes and convicted and sentenced to prison. And Alicia Owens was tried for perjury before the grand jury. She said that when she was 14, she had sex. This is all in the book, and by the way, it's already been written, doctor, so you don't have to worry about, again, a lawsuit. She had sex with the chief of police, Bob Wadman, in Omaha, Nebraska, and had a kid by him. And so they tried her for perjury in front of the grand jury. She was convicted, and she's still in prison today. She was sentenced to 25 or 30 years for perjury before the grand jury. But they just wanted her to shut up. They didn't want her to talk anymore. They wanted her to go away. But anyway, this case involved, kids talked about Bohemian Grove, talked about human sacrifices, and that the kids were, used for sex orgies in Washington, D.C. And, of course, that explains why Congress passes these unconstitutional laws, because they're being framed in many instances.
Well, we have a fascinating four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove, which, of course, is Alex Jones that actually was in there and photographed part of it. One of the interviews, though, is with a woman named Kathy O'Brien, who is a sex slave, controlled by the CIA and mind control, and she was used to satisfy the lusts of key people in our country. And this is the most incredible organization. About 3,000 people. They worship an owl. They have feigned human sacrifices. They put on their purple robes and hoods and have the chanting and feign the sacrifice of care. But behind all of this, of course, are strong occult overtones.
Well, it's satanic cult.
Sure.
And in the Nebraska case, doctor, there was, the American press wouldn't touch it. But there was a TV production company in England called Yorkshire TV, and they came over for 7 months with the camera crew, and they filmed this show. It's called Conspiracy of Silence. It was to be aired on May the 3rd, 1994, on Discovery Channel at 10 p.m., and it was actually listed in the TV guide, and it never aired. So what I did about 6 months ago, I asked for a copy of that particular TV guide, and when I obtained it, it was not listed in there. So somebody reprinted the book, but just not to be outfoxed by these people, I went to the L.A. Times TV log, and I checked on May the 3rd, 1994, and it was listed in there, Conspiracy of Silence. I also checked the TV log in Philadelphia, Philadelphia Inquirer. It was listed in the TV log there. So they actually were able to keep that show from being aired, took it out of print with the TV guide, and it never aired in this country today. By the way, I have a bootleg copy of that show. And it sells for $25 if anybody's interested in it.
Why don't you get your address out and so people will know how to get in touch with you and get your material, Ted?
Sure. Well, get your pen and paper out, folks. I have a tremendous amount of research like you do, Doctor. And in particular, this film, this videotape, which you'll find very interesting, shows the congressmen, documents the fact that these congressmen being blackmailed and that the kids were being taken back there for sex and sex orgies. And you can obtain this by writing to me or sending me a check or money order for $25, but I have some other material too, to Ted Gunderson, 1155 East Twain Avenue. That's Twain, T-W-I-N, like Mark Twain. 1155 East Twain Avenue, Unit 108-259. 108-259, Las Vegas, Nevada, 89109. 89109. That's 11, Ted Gunderson, $25 for that video, by the way. 1155 East Twain Avenue, Unit 108-259, Las Vegas, Nevada, 89109. And I have some other material, too, Doctor, that's very fascinating. Very
what is the name of that video?
That's called Conspiracy of Silence.
Conspiracy of Silence, and there really is a conspiracy of silence. I have a book called Painted Red. It's the story of the satanic cults here, written by a professor in Colorado, as I remember.
Denver.
Hey, pardon?
Denver, Colorado.
Right, and well, then you know it. But one of the things that was so interesting, he pointed out that there is a man from the FBI, or maybe a little division there, that deals with satanic cults, and their whole thrust is to convince people there aren't any.
That's Ken Lanning. He's in the behavioral science unit of the FBI in Quantico, and he says there is no organized unit, no organized network of satanic cults in this country, that they're just dabblers who write and scribble on the walls. Well, now let me tell you, folks, this is not true. There are, based on my research, between 3.5 and 4 million members of this satanic cult that are active, the satanic cult that are active in this country today. In 1970 alone, I had an informant tell me there were 500 covens in New York City alone. You figure there's at least 13 to a coven, so that's a lot of people. Now, that was 30 years ago. You can imagine how many people there are now. They have been recruiting very heavily. I'm aware of doctors, lawyers, businessmen, judges, law enforcement who are actively involved in these cults. These cults have infiltrated every level of society, and particularly our U.S. intelligence community. And why do you think that they are able to get away with the Kennedy assassination? Okay? Why do they get away? How can they get away with the Waco assassination, with the assassination of the women and children there? And of course, the mainstream media is part of it. They've infiltrated the mainstream media. And Doctor, you have the same documentation that I do. That February 9th, 1917, congressional record, Congressman Calloway said on the congressional floor that in March 1915, the J.P. Morgan interests bought up 25 of America's leading newspapers, inserted their own editor in order to control the press. That was 84, 85 years ago.
Sure. If any of our listeners would like a copy of the Congressional Record, we do offer that. That's the Congressional Record, 1917, Oscar Calloway. So if you would like to actually get that documentation, we do have that documentation available for you. Right now we've got Ron calling from Richland, Washington, and we're almost out of time. Ron, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, sir. I've listened to a fellow named Hank Hanegraaff, the Bible Answer Man, on the radio, and he's generally fairly knowledgeable, but he seems to be quite skeptical, I think, of some of this Satanism and satanic cults and human sacrifice. And he says, I don't even know who he was talking about, but he said, so-and-so never has any documentation or such-and-such.
Well, what do you think about what we've given you tonight? We've given you a number of books written by people who have looked into this. Would you like to get Maury Terry's book? I've talked to Maury Terry. Would you like to get the book by Mr. Sanders, I think it is. Anyway, the book is Ed Sanders. That's called
There's
the
all
family.
Kinds of documentation out there, Doctor.
Well, I'd like to see old Hank Hanegraaff get the book and read it.
Well, Mr. Hanegraaff... Don't hold your breath on that, Ron.
Yeah, well, what's with Hank? Has he been paid off, too?
Well, we won't get into mention Hank. Maybe he just is misinformed.
Well, maybe somebody uninformed him.
Well, that's your job.
Well,
that's
there,
your assignment, Ron. Thanks very much for calling.
Ron, there's all kinds of documentation out there. You check my website, tedgunderson.com. All small letters, tedgunderson.com. You can order my research. I have a 600-page document that sells for $75, that puts this all this in a nice little package and goes from A to Z and documents everything I've said tonight.
Okay, well, certainly it's fascinating material, and of course, Ted is one of the best informed people on these satanic cults. You actually carry that book, The Franklin Cover-Up, don't you? About,
yeah, I do.
Written by Mr. DeCamp, who was actually a legislator. Where was he, a legislator?
He was in charge of the Phoenix program in Vietnam during the Vietnam War, and was elected to a public office, a state senator, actually, while he was overseas, before he came in the United States, and he's a state senator in the state of Nebraska.
Right, and of course, these are reliable people. We've heard this from so many sources, but of course, we can't get it out the regular channels, which is why we do what we do, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, I guess this evening is Ted Gunderson, formerly with the FBI, and we're just about out of time. We've got a couple of calls on the line here. So let's say this is Willie in Kennewick. Hi, Willie. Do you have a question or comment?
I was calling because the guy that was on the caller that just called was talking about the guy that Hank
Hanegraaff. Hank is very skeptical about a lot of things.
Yeah, the guy he was talking about though was Mike Warnke.
Oh, well, Mike Warnke, I think, was a fraud.
Do you?
Yeah, I think he was. In fact, I know quite a bit about Mike. So, but there are lots of other people out there that were not fraudulent. Okay, anything else?
No, that's about it.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much. And well, just about out of time, Ted. What sort of message would you like to leave with our listeners tonight? Many of whom may be rather skeptical, and we've tried to give them the documentation, mentioning that, of course, you have a video, you'd signed confession of this woman who was involved with the Green Beret captain, and of course, he's still in prison now. Over 30 years later.
Right.
And then, of course, we have the books on the process, and I have a couple of books written by this Robert DeGrinston, who is the Satanist who had the Process Church. They're openly Satanists. They brag about being Satanists.
Well, Aleister Crowley.
Right. Of course, we have a four-tape set on Aleister Crowley and his friends, and we have a four-tape set on Satanism and deliverance. We have the information by people who've been there and known these people, and of course, the four-tape set on Satanism and deliverance is, of course, by a woman who was part of a satanic cult. Her family, everybody in her family was part of the satanic cult, gives you tremendous insight into what we're talking about.
Absolutely. Well, Aleister Crowley wrote two books, The Law is for All and Magic in Theory and Practice.
Right.
And in there he talks about how to conduct a human human sacrifice. And talks about how children should be exposed to sex at the time of birth and how it's all right to rape somebody because you're emancipating them.
Well, of course, she was a real sick individual. He was also a very high-ranking Mason, and of course he was, as he says, he was a 33rd degree Mason for 12 years before being promoted to the upper echelons of Masonry, where, of course, this is frank Luciferianism. Ted, we're just out of time. Look, thank you so very much for being with us, and I hope you'll be on our other programs. Your message is important. We need to get it out, and I appreciate your courage and being willingness to talk on these things.
Thank you very much, Stan. Dr. Stan, we'll talk to you later.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want you to understand that I would not put somebody on unless I was certain that they were legitimate, and Ted Gunderson is. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there and you'd like to, of course, help Radio Liberty as we reach out across America now, 4 hours every day on shortwave, 5 hours every day on the Internet, and on stations all across the country, and we'll be taking on a number of new stations starting next week. Why, quite frankly, we need your help to be able to do what we do. So we hope many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And it's as simple as picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a copy of our January newsletter, our January newsletter deals with a secret society called the Illuminati. What do we know about the Illuminati? Well, we know what George Washington said. We know what Timothy Dwight, the president of Yale University, said on July 4th, 1798. And he was Jonathan Edwards' grandson. And we know what the president of Harvard University said. And all of this is recorded in our January newsletter. We'll be glad to send you a free copy of that, free of charge. You might be surprised to know that Thomas Jefferson was involved in spiritualism as well. You might be surprised to know that the Illuminati, a man named Edward Genet, who was a member of the Illuminati, is a Jacobin, was involved with creating the Whiskey Rebellion in Pennsylvania in 1794. There's so much information that you're not going to get to the regular channels. So if you'd like a free copy of our January newsletter, or you can go up on the website and pull that down off of our website at radioliberty.com. We do hope that you'll tell others about our program. If you do need to get a shortwave set for the evening program, you might give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for some suggestions. We hope that you want to think about some of the videos we offer, specifically Diapracts in the Church, which goes into this whole concept of the church growth movement, the purpose-driven life, the purpose-driven church. What is this really about? Well, I suggest you get the video, Diapracts in the Church, our four-tape set on the church growth movement, and you'll get a fair amount of literature along with this. But this is the most dangerous movement to attack Christianity here in the United States since, of course, the time leading up to the Second Great Awakening in the 1830s. And if we do not stop this movement, then the church as we know it will cease to be effective as an instrument in society. And, of course, the entire thrust of the church growth movement is to bring loud, raucous music into the church, telling us, well, that's God's music, and, well, maybe that's their God, but that's not the God that I worship. That's not his music. And if you heard our program this afternoon with Carson Holloway talking about the effect of music has on the individual, on the heart, and on the soul, you'll understand why it's so important to bring the raucous music into the church and to deceive the parishioners. So if you'd like to get Diapracts in the Church or the four-tape set on the church growth movement, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like to get our video, Megiddo, our video, The Brotherhood of Darkness, our video, Iraq, The Untold Story, which tells you that all of the wars of the last century were unnecessary. They were all contrived. Certainly there was no Gulf of Tonkin incident. It was used simply to justify taking our boys into the war, where 58,000 American boys died for absolutely nothing, in a war that we fought to lose because we were never allowed to win it. If you'd like to get these items, our number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, because we're on the front lines of this satanic battle, this eternal battle between good and evil that will determine whether America will survive or will simply be destroyed as some other great nations down through the ages. So until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we're hoping very, very soon to have our good friend John Loeffler on the line. So we're trying to track him down, we'll just talk a little bit about the problems that we've been talking about. This idea that there are satanic organizations in the world today, well, that's really very, very foreign to what many, many people believe. But unfortunately, there really are satanic organizations. We had them right here in Santa Cruz some years ago. In fact, I'll never forget a friend of mine who actually had a rabbit, and they had this old pet rabbit out in the backyard in a pen. And one evening, one morning, they went out to feed the rabbit, and the rabbit was dead. All of the blood had been drained out of the rabbit. And this man was certainly well-known in the church. And this, of course, I think you have to understand that there's a fascination with drinking blood in these people who've involved with the satanic cults. So we certainly hope that many of you will understand that this is not imaginary. There's a great deal of information about these satanic cults. It's all out there, and, well, our job is to try to get people to understand really what we're up against. Well, we're trying to get, of course, John Loeffler, and if we can't get John, we're going to have to talk about something else. We're in the process right now of trying to track him down. But let's talk a little bit about, what happened on September 11th, because this sort of gets into the article that I'm writing today, my next month's newsletter. And we've had a number of times on our radio program a man named Jim Mars, and I like Jim. He's a very, very good writer, and he's written the book Crossfire, the story of the assassination of President Kennedy. About well over a million copies of that were sold. His second book, Rule by Secrecy, over 500,000 was sold, and we carry the books to this day because we think it goes into the background of the secret societies that are out there. But then there was, a new book he wrote right after September 11th. It was called The War on Freedom. And it was going to be published by HarperCollins. They paid him a very, very hefty retainer because, of course, his books had done so well before. And whenever you write a book, it has to go through all sorts of reviews to make sure there's not going to be anything libelous or that the information in it is accurate. And so that's exactly what happened. And Jim had spent many weeks going through the book with their legal department, and it had passed legal review. It was all set to be published. Everybody at HarperCollins was very, very excited until somebody in the major office announced that they were not going to publish the book because they were afraid that, it might offend the sensibilities of the families of the people who perished in the World Trade Center. So they simply paid Jim Mars off. I gave him all the money that was promised him, refused to publish the book, and, of course, gave him back the rights to his book. But it's very hard for an individual to get books circulated, so we carry the book, and other people do, but this is not getting the coverage that it would have gotten had it been released by HarperCollins. Well, anyway, we had Jim Mars as a guest on my program here three or four weeks ago. And I'm going to tell you this story. It's really sort of an incredible story as soon as we get back from the break. Well, Jim Mars just came onto my program, and he said, well, you know, there's this story that has been pretty well suppressed by the media. It's the story of Norman Mineta, who was the Secretary of Transportation, a member of the cabinet, And, of course, his testimony before the investigating committee of Congress looking into what happened on 9-1-1. And according to Jim Mars, Norman Mineta testified, and I want you to think back if you've ever heard a story like this, that on the morning of 9-11, he went to the White House, and, of course, they were evacuating the White House after the first plane had crashed into the North Tower. And so he was then immediately taken by the Secret Service down into the special command room where, of course, the administration would control everything, this underground bunker. And who was there but the Dick Cheney? And so they, of course, were North Tower had been hit, the South Tower had been hit, and now the plane is coming to Washington, D.C. They're monitoring this plane. And an aide rushes in and says, the plane is 50 miles out. The plane is coming. It's 50 miles out. And Dick Cheney nods. The aide comes back again and says, the plane is 30 miles out. And Dick Cheney nods. The aide comes back again and says, the plane is 10 miles out. Do the orders still hold? And Cheney jerks his head around and growls, of course the orders still hold. What makes you think the orders wouldn't hold? And then, of course, a few minutes later, why the plane hits the Pentagon. Now, they were monitoring this plane as it was coming in. Nothing was done to stop it. When Norman Mineta was asked, well, what about this now? What were the orders that Dick Cheney was talking about? And Mineta said, I don't know what the orders were. And then, of course, they said, well, who was the aide? And Mineta said, I don't know who the aide was. All I know is what I just told you. And I want you to contemplate really what we're talking about. Now, there's an air base right across the Potomac, so that anything happens in Washington, D.C., within about a minute, minute and a half, they can have fighter planes which can fly 1,800 miles an hour, that's 30 miles a minute, they can have them into Washington, D.C. But on the morning of September 11th, they didn't bring the planes in from across the Potomac. They could have been there because they had at least, 50 miles out. The planes are flying 10 miles an hour. So they would have had 10 minutes to, at least 5 minutes, they could have had the planes there to intercept the incoming plane that was going to hit the Pentagon. But they didn't take the planes from across the Potomac. They brought them in from Langley, Virginia. Now, Langley is a couple of hundred miles away. In 10 minutes, this plane could fly about 300 miles an hour. They fly 30 miles a minute. So, but they tell us that when the planes hit, they were still 10 minutes out. So that means that they must have been doing circles around Langley or stopped for lunch or something on the way, because they could have covered 300 miles in 10 minutes. But they were still 10 minutes away from Washington, D.C. Now, what's wrong with this picture? Well, what's wrong with it is that they were monitoring the planes coming in, and they did nothing to stop them. And there were orders, and nobody will talk about the orders. But anyway, is the story true? Because I've never heard this story, and I wonder how many people in the listening audience have heard the story I just told you about Norman Mineta's testimony. Well, I'll have to admit, I was a little skeptical when Jim Mars said it, because I read 5 newspapers every day. I scan half a dozen news magazines every week and read several of them on a regular basis, and I get material sent to me from all over the country, and I went up on the internet and I spent 2 hours trying to track down Norman Mineta's testimony, and I couldn't find that testimony. So I finally went to Jim Mars and I said, Jim, it's a great story, but you know, I can't put that out on my radio station unless I'm absolutely sure it's real. Can you find it for me? Well, Jim was very reluctant to find it. He didn't know where it was. It was buried in his files someplace. And about my third call, I said, Jim, I've got to see that documentation. So he said, fine, let's go on the internet together. We went on the internet, he in his home and I in my office, and sure enough, he led me right to it. It's there. It's very hard to find, but the story is exactly as I told you. Dick Cheney was down there, and there were orders. Nobody knows what the orders were, but we do know one thing. They didn't use the missile batteries. They didn't bring in any planes to stop it. They knew a plane was coming in. They were tracking the plane coming in. There were orders in place. They hadn't changed. And the plane crashed into the Pentagon, killing all on board and killing a number of people working in the Pentagon. So if that really is true and this is the testimony, why is it nobody ever heard of it? Why didn't I hear it? Why haven't you heard of it until now? And I would like to suggest that there is a great deal of concealment about what happened on the 11th of September. I mean, there's so many stories out there. We know that there were 15 of the 19 terrorists, at least according to the FBI, were from Saudi Arabia. We know that the government had absolutely no idea who these people were. They had no idea an attack was coming, and yet, according to Christine Breitweiser's testimony before the investigating committee, she quoted the New York Times that said within 2 hours of the attack, why the FBI was at the restaurants where the hijackers ate, the neighborhoods where they lived, the training schools where they had trained to fly planes. What's wrong with this story? She even pointed out that the FBI had records of telephone calls made a week before the attack by the hijackers who didn't know who they were, and yet they have the complete text of their telephone calls. What does that suggest to you? We know, of course, on the morning of the attack, that nine of them were stopped. And, of course, they had their box cutters and everything with them, and yet they were allowed to get onto the plane. Now, the government had no idea who they were, but six of them were on a terrorist watch list. Does that seem inconsistent to you? Who was financing this whole movement? Well, if you read the book Crude Politics by Paul Sperry, the senior correspondent for WorldNet Daily, you'll find out that there was a General Mohammed Ahmed, who was the chief of Pakistani intelligence, working very closely with the CIA, who wired had $100,000 wired to a man named Mohammed Atta, who we're told led the attack just a few weeks before the attack on the World Trade Center. And we have this, of course, from many other sources, not simply Paul Sperry's book, but simply this is a place where you can readily get the information. But you can go up on the Alex Jones website and you'll find references to this story. It appeared in the India Times and several other publications. And as a result of that, why, of course, Ahmed was relieved of his command and given another key position in the Pakistani army. But, of course, he was never suggested any try him for funding the terrorists that flew into the World Trade Center. And, of course, we know that the Saudis, Arabians, were behind this, the Saudi royal family, and yet they're being protected by the Bush administration. We know that there was advanced knowledge. How do we know? Well, there have been so much information. One of the things, a friend of mine, his name is Dr. Garth Nicholson, was contacted by people he knew in the FBI who told him, there's going to be an attack on the Pentagon on the 11th of September. And he notified people and key people in government, and they sent emails to Alex Jones and Joyce Riley about that beforehand. But you never heard that story. How could he possibly have known that ahead of time? Why? Because people in the government knew, and they were afraid to come forward publicly. David Shippers had been notified there'd be an attack on Lower Manhattan in the early part of September. He went to Washington, D.C., tried to tell Ashcroft, tried to tell all the key people in government he had known because he'd worked there for years, and none of them wanted to hear there was going to be an attack on Lower Manhattan in early September. We know that Salman Rushdie was notified on September the 6th that he was not to fly on American airplanes or Canadian commercial airliners because they just weren't safe. And Salman Rushdie, shortly after the attack on September 11th, did an interview with the London Times, which he said he was certain that the American government had advanced knowledge because of what he had been told and warned on September 6th. And you know the most amazing thing? Somebody pulled that article off of the Internet so you couldn't get it off the web. It was a London Times article. We have it. We eventually were able to track it down and verify it. But it was almost as if somebody didn't want you to get that information. We know that Willie Brown was notified the night before, that was September the 10th, that he should be very careful flying the following day. And, of course, we checked the story out personally with Willie Brown's press secretary and confirmed it. But the most amazing thing is that article disappeared out of the San Francisco Chronicle. It was only there in one edition, and somebody pulled that down off the Internet, almost as if somebody was covering up the truth from the American people. Well, we don't have a program. Our special guest this evening is not available. So I'm simply going to ask you, if you have a question or comment, you'd like to give us a call. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, it's 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We'd love to hear from you. And we can cover another subject. Perhaps you have a question or comment that you'd like to make on the, what's going on in the world today. But there is just so much evidence that there was advanced knowledge. Dennis Cuddy, and of course Dr. Cuddy's books, we carry them, 9-1-1, prior knowledge and cover up. But he points out that in the Newsweek magazine that came out almost immediately after the September 11th attack, there was an article about the high officials in the Pentagon who were scheduled to fly on the 11th of September, but they canceled their flights on the 10th of September. The article reappeared in the Newsweek magazine on the 24th of September of 2001, exactly the same article. High Pentagon officials canceled their flights for the 11th of September on the 10th of September. Now, why would they cancel their flights? That for the 11th of September, certainly everybody knew that there was going to be some sort of a crisis, but everybody was continuing to fly and live normally, and they were supposedly, we were wondering where the attack was going to come. The government kept insisting it was going to be overseas. The intelligence agency says, oh, we think it's going to be overseas, despite the fact that the Moroccan government had told them the attack was going to be here. The Jordanian government had told them the attack was going to be here. The Mossad had told them the attack was going to be here. Putin of Russia had told him the attack was going to be here. The German government had told him the attack was going to be here. There were 11 countries that told him the attack was going to be here in the United States. And yet, our intelligence officials insisted that they knew the attack was going to be overseas. It was not going to be here in the United States. And that the last thing that anybody would have thought was, of course, that there would be the use of airplanes to crash into our buildings and then use as weapons. And yet, we know, according to a book called Attack on America and the West, it was written in 1993 by a man named Joseph Badansky. We know that in that book, Joseph Badansky said that as of early 1983, in the early 1980s, about 1981, 1982, 1983, the Iranians had actually set up a training camp in Iran where they had 747s and 707s there, and they were using them to train the terrorists on how to hijack our planes and crash them into our buildings. And you can get that story either out of the book Attack America in the West by Joseph Badansky, or if you can find the November, the September 24th, as I remember, New Yorker magazine. I have a copy of it, the one that came out immediately after the 9-1-1 attack. Joseph Badansky is quoted there saying exactly the same thing. Now, Badansky gets his information from American intelligence, so obviously they knew that there was going to be the terrorists were planning on hijacking our planes and crashing them into buildings. Why would they say that they had no idea this was going to happen? And then, of course, in 1994, they hijacked an airplane in Algiers that Islamic terrorists had, and they flew it to Marseille, and they landed, and they asked to have the plane refueled to get the fuel while they released some of the hostages. The hostages told the gendarmes, the French police, that the terrorists were planning on flying the plane to Paris and crashing it into the Eiffel Tower, whereupon they blocked the takeoff. They stormed the plane and killed the terrorists. But this was well known in 1995 in Manila, why there was a man named Murad and another man named Ramzi Yosef, who was the master bomb maker, who had actually blown up the World Trade Center in 1993. And they were planning on hijacking our planes. It was all in the computer, laptop computer that the Philippine police got, hijacking American planes and crashing them into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, the Sears building in Chicago, the Transamerica building in San Francisco. Our government knew that, but of course they suppressed that information totally. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and if you're out there and you'd like to give us a call, Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. We were just talking about this operation. Some people called it Operation Pachinko. Actually, Bill Gertz called it Operation Pachinko. And Internet directive we have, Internet article we have, written in July of the year 2001, 2 months before the attack on the World Trade Center. And with, this was published, and I think it was for the United Airlines stewardesses or hostesses. Anyway, he was writing at that time about Operation Pachinko and the terrorist plan to hijack our planes and crash them into the World Trade Center, into the Pentagon, into the White House, into the Sears building and the Transamerica building. And he specifically mentioned in that article the World Trade Center. Now, this was 2 months before it happened. There's other articles we have that were published in the Washington Times with the same story. Of course, Bill Gertz works for the Washington Times. Now, what's really so amazing about that story is when Bill Gertz wrote a book, I think it was called Breakdown, and it was published last year, and it was about, see, the breakdown in our intelligence. We had no idea what was going to happen, and it was just amazing that they could have done this, and just the incompetence with our intelligence agencies. And when I had him as a guest, I said to him, Bill, I was so impressed with the fact that we have the article you wrote 2 months before the attack, in which you talked about Operation Pachinko and the plan to hijack planes and crash them into the World Trade Center. Oh, he said that article was a mistake. And I said, what do you mean it was a mistake? You said exactly what was going to happen. Oh no, it was a mistake. I had all the wrong information. And I'm listening to him. I'm saying, how can you say he had the wrong information when that's just what happened? Was this an example of an effort to cover up the truth? Well, all I can do is tell you what the facts as I know them. If any of you want to see the article, we still have that. We used that in our article back in September of 2001, where we pointed out that we were not getting the truth about what really happened on the morning of September 11th. Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling in from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Good, Dr. Monteith. I want to make two quick points here. George Bush stayed away from the White House. That is, he took a month's vacation in August of 2001. He was down in Texas the whole month. And at the time, everybody said, God, he's not even in the office a year yet, and he's taking a full month off. And he was down in Texas that whole month. Wouldn't go near the White House. Now, I believe the intelligence agencies told him it was going to happen in August. I really do. And it so happened first part of September. But another point, Bill Clinton was going to move into a housing complex right near the World Trade Center. He was told by the CIA, no, this is not a good idea. And he moved up to Harlem, 5 miles away from where the World Trade Center was. He was going to live within a few blocks of the World Trade Center. Do you remember when he moved? He changed his mind about renting down there?
Well, I really don't remember that. But okay, do you know for a fact the CIA told him that wasn't a good idea?
I read that somewhere. I don't have the actual source, but either the CIA or one of the government agencies said, we think it's a good idea not to move there. So then Bill Clinton said, well, I want to save the taxpayers' rent. And up near Harlem, up near 125th Street up there, it's one-third the rental cost. That was his excuse.
Well, that was very nice of him.
But it was interesting that right before the World Trade Center attack, he got 5 miles away from the area he originally was going to move to.
All right.
And one more point.
All right, go ahead.
Muhammad Atta's father said in an interview, my son called me up on the phone on the 12th of September. He was alive and well the day after. He said, my son was nervous on the phone, and I never heard from him again.
Well, have you? Can you document that any place?
I can't document. You know, I read so much of this stuff. I don't have it in front of me, no.
Ray, you've got to start keeping records and get that so you can get it to me.
Okay.
Right after the attack, it was, I think, maybe the 12th or 13th, one of our callers called in and told the Willie Brown story. You know, Willie Brown had been called the night before the attack and told he couldn't call. And I challenged him, and I said, I'm not going to believe that unless you send me the article. He sent me the article. To my knowledge, it was the only copy of that article in the conservative movement.
Okay,
I went to a meeting shortly thereafter, and Joseph Farrer was there. He's the editor of WorldNet Daily. And he was talking about this article he'd heard about, but he said he didn't know it was true or not because they couldn't get it off the Internet. They couldn't get a copy from the San Francisco Chronicle. But he'd heard about this Willie Brown story, and so I just reached into my pocket and handed him a copy. And that that copy that one of my listeners sent, from Ed from Aptos, sent to me, circulated all throughout the conservative movement. So when you see something important like that, Ray, get it so we can document it.
I agree with you, Doctor. It's important to keep a record of the sources. I'll do that from now on.
Well, but I'll tell you, in light of what you said, there has been an article in Inside Magazine that at least six of the hijackers who perished in the World Trade Center seem to be alive and well over in Arabia. So maybe things are not exactly as we've been led to believe.
There's more to that 19 than we know about yet. More is going to come out, but I don't believe those 19 Arabs did it myself. But that's only my conjecture.
Well, there's something very strange about what happened because, you have Muhammad Atta, leaving his car with all of the evidence that pointing to he's the ringleader at an airport, so that will be found by the FBI. You have two of the passports, one falling out of a plane, there in New York, and the other falling out of the plane in Pennsylvania. The black boxes didn't survive, but the passports did. What's wrong with this picture?
Something's not right.
I mean, you have to think that they must have total contempt for the American people. They must think we're awfully stupid.
But anyway, Doctor, I think it's suspicious that Bill Clinton moved away from that area and that George Bush was absent from the White House the month of August. I just think those two things we should think about.
Well, have you ever read Mindy Kleinberg's testimony before the Intelligence Committee? Because she talks about what happened on the morning of the attack and how, the president knew there'd been an attack. He knew, he'd seen the pictures of the second plane hitting the building, and yet he goes in and he's going to read to these students about a goat or a sheep or something of the sort. And then, of course, Secret Service comes and whispers in his ear and tells him America's under attack. And what does the president do? He continues reading about the goat. Another 6 minutes. This is not the sort of thing that a rational person would do.
Well, Dr. Monteith, one more thing before I leave. We're going to have information come to us before this is over that's going to shake the foundations of this society, because I know there was foreknowledge. They knew about it.
Sure. Well, I know that they have foreknowledge. Oh. Because certainly my friend Garth Nicholson told me, he was told by people in the FBI, there's going to be an attack on the Pentagon on the 11th of September. He notified other people in government, but of course... nobody's going to talk about that. They're certainly not going to call him to appear before the investigating committees.
They needed another Pearl Harbor. They had to have another Pearl Harbor.
They absolutely did, and that was exactly what was planned. And if you read the writings of the people from the Project for the New American Century called Rebuilding America's Defenses, you can get it off their Internet site. And, of course, there they talk about we're not going to be able to accomplish our goal unless there is a catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor. That was their words, not mine.
Okay, thanks, Doctor.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to Jerry, who's calling from Los Angeles. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Hi, Jerry. How are you doing?
How you doing, Dr. Stan?
Doing just fine.
I have a very nice picture I bought in downtown or Alvarado Street of the version of Guadalupe. If you look at the picture of a version of Guadalupe, you'll see a crescent moon on her feet. And I think this is symbology of the way Christianity will overcome Islam. Because I think the crescent moon is the symbol of Islam. And I think devotion and understanding of Our Lady of Guadalupe is the way to conquer Islam, and that's what I have to say.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much for calling, Jerry.
Thank you very much.
Bye bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And, of course, our regularly scheduled guest did not show up this evening, and so we'll be glad to talk to you if you have any question or comment. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you're listening out there on shortwave anyplace across America, we'd appreciate hearing from you. You don't even have to go on the air. We just would like to know that you are listening. Again, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY if you're listening on shortwave, so we'll know that you're out there in the listening audience. Let's go to Kitty calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Kitty.
Hello.
Hi, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I have a question and a comment. The question is, do you know the name Mae Brussels?
I sure do.
Okay, well, I have that background, but my observation from watching it on the morning was simply that and the following events simply adds up to they are... This is an attempt to destroy our financial structure, because that's what they have done. We have immediately spending money like it's going out of style, and so we are being sold down the river.
All right, you will not get any criticism at all from me on that.
Okay,
it's a tremendous waste of money.
Oh yes,
you might perhaps you could justify going into Afghanistan to try to get the wicked Osama bin Laden after the attack, assuming he was responsible for it.
Yes,
the problem is when we went into Afghanistan, we didn't try to get Osama bin Laden. We have an article we offer to our listeners from the Washington Times by a high official who said, our policy is not Osama bin Laden first in Afghanistan. It's Osama bin Laden last, because if we got Osama bin Laden, how would we justify this war? And, of course, the same thing is true with the book of Crude Politics by Paul Sperry, a senior correspondent for WorldNet Daily, who tells us that when, of course, we went into Afghanistan, we sent in our special forces, and they were not allowed to go after Osama bin Laden. So the reasons that were given for going into Afghanistan were not true. But then after that, why did we go into Iraq? That is the
yes.
question.
Well, speaking of Afghanistan, the news is, of course, that the dope that they're growing now, the poppies, has increased. And that whole drug thing is a worse condition than it was when we went there.
I think, of course, you have to understand that the Taliban had the drugs pretty well under control.
That's what I mean.
And the CIA has been involved with world drug smuggling
they're
for
always,
many years.
They're the ones.
If anybody doubts that, you need to get the books we carry. The books we carry on drugs, one of them is called Drugging America. The other is called Defrauding America. They're both written by Rodney Stitch. Our four-tape set, Is There Really a War on Drugs? The book that has an essay in it by Gary Webb, formerly Pulitzer Prize-winning author, reporter from the San Jose Mercury, about what happened to him when he told about the CIA's involvement in drugs. That's called Into the Buzzsaw.
Yes.
We have so much information that will point out that the CIA has been involved in drugs, certainly before the Vietnam War.
It's in the business.
Right. Well, somebody's got to finance all
of
that.
Well, I'm just an ordinary person, and they don't fool me any.
Well, you know, but you're unusual in that you have some grasp of what's going on, Kitty. When you tell the average person this, their eyes glaze over, because our CIA couldn't do something like that.
Well, at any rate, we know what's happening, and we're not fooled, and that's a big, important thing.
It really has. And, of course, I can tell that you're a good student of Mae Brussels, because for our listeners out there who don't know who Mae was, she was a lady who lived in the Monterey Bay area, and she studied this in great detail, and she did a wonderful job on radio for many years, bringing out the truth about the interconnections between all of these various organizations.
And now you're doing it.
Well, we're doing the best we
can. And I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. And we have actually, from time to time, one of her close disciples, a man named Dave Emery. And I don't know if you've heard Dave
on
my program.
Yes, but he's not as coherent as you are.
Well, I think he's pretty good. But,
okay.
But I appreciate the comment on your part, Kitty. God bless you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. And again, our telephone number is 1-888 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to actually give us a call if you have a question or comment. I did want to mention that Dave Emery will be speaking down at the Loud Nelson Center this coming Saturday at 7 o'clock. And then, of course, this coming Saturday, there's going to be a meeting. Apparently, it's going to be from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Santa Cruz Bible Church. And it's being sponsored by the Green Valley Church, the Santa Cruz Bible Church, the San Lorenzo Valley Baptist Church, and the King's Church of the King. And, of course, they're going to be hearing George Grant. And he's going to be coming to talk on the Muslim movement. And so if you'd like to go ahead and you can call the Santa Cruz Bible Church and get more information on that, or you can call Bill Garraway and get information. I have a number here, 476-4877. That's 476-4877. But it sounds like a great program from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. There's going to be a lunch there. And let me suggest that it should be an exciting time talking about what really is going on as far as Islam is concerned. We've got Philip calling from San Antonio. Hi, Philip. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Are you listening on the Internet or shortwave?
Shortwave.
Okay, wonderful. It's good to know you're there.
I'd like to make a comment on that previous caller's statement about the image on that idol that he was speaking about, the crescent moon and stuff. If the truth were to be known, and most of your Roman Catholic lay people don't realize this, but Islam and the Vatican are tied in pretty close with the same objectives of subverting the Constitution of America, subverting freedom, and the Pope has met numerous times with Yasser Arafat over the years, and if you've noticed, Islam never in the past 4 or 5 years that I can think of has bombed any of the Vatican's interests here or abroad. So there's a tie-in there, and they're trying to bring in the one-world religious aspect together, and then you've got Billy Graham and his group trying to bring in, President Bush and Cheney and them guys are trying to bring in the political aspect of the one-world order. So there's the whole conspiracy of this whole thing ties in politically and religiously. And these guys are all basically birds of the same feather, and we're sitting here in America, and your average guy, as long as he can still buy a six-pack of beer and watch the faggot maggots on the television programs, they don't really care, it seems to be.
Well, our job is, of course, to make people understand how this fits together, and we have a four-tape set called The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. Malachi was a Jesuit, but he talks about the satanic influence within the Vatican. It doesn't mean that most Catholics have anything to do with Satanism, but they have infiltrated the Vatican, and if you haven't heard our four-tape set, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, you really should. And, of course, but the Luciferians have infiltrated the Protestant church, too. So, Philip, we got real problems. If you haven't seen our four-tape set on the church growth movement or heard our video on diapraxy in the church and what they're doing to the Protestants, why, we need to get the information out. We got real problems.
We do.
God bless you. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Let's go to Nathan. Hi, Nathan. How are you doing?
Hi. Good evening, Dr. Stan. I'm sure you have a full board, so I'll just make this quick. The following I'm about to say is my opinion merely. I just want to make 2 points. First of all, I can't possibly begin to comment on everything discussed tonight, but I believe that we need a political party that is essentially one that, as part of its platform, exposes the Skull and Bones influence and basically the fact that it is a political monopoly, and that we have an elite of interlocking bloodlines that go back to the Middle Ages, if not the ancient world, in charge of modern history. And we need to have a political party that gives an alternative to this. And I would hope that as part of its platform, it would have a specific recognition of Torah law and of God's law, of divine law, as part of an amendment to our Constitution explicitly recognizing this. This would be my hope, an explicit recognition of God. But, you know, I'm not going to tell Americans what to do. The point is, I think we need this really, it's not a third party, it's a second party.
All right, well,
that's how it seems to me.
All right, fine. I really don't want to amend the Constitution. We got a pretty good Constitution. Let's just try enforcing it. God bless.
Thanks
very much, Nathan. Let's go to Steve calling from Royal Oak, Michigan. Steve, how are you listening to us on the shortwave or Internet?
On the Internet, Doctor.
Okay, fine. A question or comment?
Just a comment. Just like to just give you my thanks and how much I appreciate your fine program and guests.
Well, thank you so much. It's good to know that, you know, people are out there listening. Sometimes I sit here in a room all by myself. The only thing I have is a screen in front of me, and people type names in on it from the other room. So it's good to know that you're listening.
Yeah, Dr. Day last night was like a breath of fresh air. I know some of her doctrines are kind of off the wall, but she sure got a right spirit.
Well, she sure does, and I'll tell you that there's a lot of truth in what she says. Now, I'm not about to give up eating meat. I like a good steak, and I like a good hamburger.
I'll tell you what,
if I had a metastatic cancer, I would sure listen to exactly what she has to say, and I would change my diet so fast. But right now I'm 75 years old, and I figure that if I lose a year or two and I only live to be 98 instead of 100, I'm not going to worry.
Yeah, you're doing great. And sure, it was good to hear from Ted Gunderson again. Used to listen to him all the time on Bo Bright's show.
Right. I thought that was a fascinating program tonight. And of course, the difficulty is that people do not understand there really are satanic organizations. In fact, what motivates all of these organizations, and I'm talking about the Council on Foreign Relations, I'm talking about the Bilderbergers, I'm talking about the Trilateral Commission. In fact, if you look at their logo, what is it? It's three intertwining sixes. Mm-hmm. You think that's just a mistake? You know, the Masons, the upper echelons of Masonry, the average Mason doesn't understand this, but the upper echelons do. I mean, the Rosicrucians, the Luciferians, the Priory, we've done some programs on that, and that's a secret society over in Europe dedicated to uniting all of Europe, and of course this goes back to the ancient secret society. So,
I've been praying for a friend of mine who's gotten out of the Masons, but he still feels bound by those oaths, you know, and I know the Lord came to set him free.
Well, he's got to renounce those oaths.
Yes, I know that, and just keep praying, and be encouraged in the Lord.
Amen to that. Thanks so very much for calling, Steve.
Good night, sir.
God bless you. Let's go to Arlene, who's calling from Santa Cruz, and our telephone number, I might mention, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. So that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295, and Arlene from California, Santa Cruz. Hi, how are you doing?
Well, it's me again.
Right.
The reason why I'm calling is I believe two callers ago, the man tried to put the blame on the Catholic Church for the possibly one world religion plans and so on and so forth. And I object to that kind of thing because, first of all, where is he coming from? What kind of proof does this man have? What kind of credentials does he have? The one world order is, as you say, a higher echelon thing around the world. It's all the very wealthy, all the kings and queens and whatever you want to call them that are plotting this and have been for years with the Masons.
You're absolutely right.
And I don't understand. I don't think it's fair. I don't think somebody should be allowed to come out and cause that kind of, you know, somebody along the way might say, well, oh, yeah, sure, that must be it.
Now, well, of course, you notice that I pointed out, look, we got the same basic problems within the Protestant church.
You got it everywhere.
And it is not simply the Catholics, it's not simply the Protestants. I mean, this infiltrates every aspect of our society, and how easy it is to point at the Catholics and say, boy, they're behind this, and yet many of our Protestant religious leaders are right out there doing exactly the same thing.
Oh my, yes. And you know, you've said several times that you felt that there was an apostasy in the evangelistic movement here, and that people needed to get back to the basics.
Right.
And I agree with that.
And, of course, the same thing is true of the Catholic Church. They need to get back to the basics. But, you know, I certainly do not allow people ordinarily to just come on here and just bash Catholics, because some of my best friends are Catholics. We may disagree on some things on theology, but we agree in the death and the resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ.
I understand you also met Father Malachi.
I never met him, but I did three interviews with him. And then I have a fourth interview that my friend John Leffler did, and we put it together into a four-tape set called The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, and it will simply blow your mind if you hear them. And, of course, he has that wonderful Irish brogue, you know. And he's
yes.
And actually, I did meet him one time. He probably would never remember me. I met him when he talked at the Human Life International meeting over in San Jose, I don't know, a decade or so ago.
Yeah, because I think he's gone now.
He passed away at a rather mysterious circumstance.
Yes, yes. Well, because he had, he was very much into the Satanism and exorcism and this sort of thing, which actually exists.
Well, you know, my first real contact with him was when we were over in Hawaii. I think it was about 1980. We'd just come back from Africa, and I was going to a medical meeting over there, and my wife was with me. And of course, the movie The Exorcist had just come out. And
oh, boy.
I didn't know too much about this sort of thing, but I saw this book down in the bookstore there. It was called Hostages of the Devil. It was written by somebody called Father Malachi Martin.
Right.
So we bought the book, and I thought, oh, that'd be interesting to read. And so I went off. I went off to the meeting, and my wife took the book, and she went up to our room, and she tells the story. She sits down on the bed. She starts to read lays down on the bed, starts to read the book, and the bed begins to shake.
Oh boy!
And it just scared her half to death. She didn't know what to make of it. And so, she got up and walked around again, and then she went over and sat down again, and started to read the book, and the bed began to shake. She wouldn't stay in that room alone after that. And there was no earthquake, there was no nothing. Well, this was my first real introduction into the supernatural, the fact that there really are satanic.
Very powerful.
Have you ever read the book?
Yes.
Isn't that a wonderful book?
And it's very powerful.
It really is. And so from there on, of course, I was always intrigued by Father Malachi, and I had the opportunity, as I say, to hear him speak a number of times, and then to do the actual interviews with him, and really get to know him, and then to put together this four-tape set. There's nothing really quite like the Wisdom of Malachi Martin. He talks about his book, The Keys of This Blood, which I think was a great book. And then the story of the Windswept House, where he talks about the satanic ceremonies that were held in the basement of the Vatican.
Right.
And of course, it was a feigned sacrifice, but it was timed to coincide with a real human sacrifice that was held elsewhere in the
world.
And
that's predicted, actually, that would happen to the church. And the other thing is that because of the numbers involved in the number of Catholics versus, say, the numbers of a lot of other denominations, once the Catholic Church would go down, so do they all.
Well, they're attacking both great branches of Christendom today.
Right.
And, of course, a lot of Protestants rub their hands together and say, oh, boy, look at all those scandals of the Catholic Church. And I say, don't you realize, of course, they're under attack, but we're under attack, too. They want to destroy Christianity. This is a conspiracy against God. They've infiltrated the Catholic seminaries. They've put these people into key positions in the Catholic Church to destroy it because they feel it's a bulwark against Satanism.
Sure, it is. It definitely is. And I think that people had better be, look to their own house, like this man, I say, if you live in a glass house, don't throw stones.
Well, that's the way I try to deal with this, because you'd be amazed at how many people attack me. First of all, because I won't attack the Catholics, then because I won't attack the Jews. I can't please everybody. I say what I believe is right. A lot of wonderful Jewish people out there who love America, and a lot of them really appreciate Christianity, even though they're not Christians, because they realize that it is Christianity that has given the Jewish people a wonderful opportunity to prosper and to be free here, really free of any real persecution. But I fear that there is a growing tide of anti-Semitism here.
Yeah.
I believe there's a growing tide of anti-Christian bigotry here in this country, too.
Well, they want to destroy it because we believe that God's our creator, and they don't believe that.
Right. Well, we've got real problems, Arlene, but, you know, all we can do is do our best. The miraculous thing is we have a voice. And, I mean, if you stop and think, I started off with this one little station here back in 1994, I guess, when we first started broadcasting. You know, starting on Monday, we'll be in Chicago, we'll be in Flint, Michigan, we'll be in Albany, we'll be in Utica. With this program, it'll be heard in Fort Wayne, heard on four stations up in the Great Northwest,
great.
Heard all across the country on shortwave, heard across the country on internet. And that's just one. That's just the evening program. We've got great listening audiences in the afternoon and in the early morning. That program we do in Colorado is heard not only in Colorado and Wyoming and part of little of Indiana. It's also heard in Delaware. It's heard in Florida. It's heard in, I believe, in Mississippi or Louisiana. I'm not sure which. So, you know, God has given us a voice. And,
yes, he has.
And we have to use that voice as long as he allows us to.
Well, if you send me that January newsletter, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, fine. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to put you on hold, and you'll have to give your address to our producer. How's that? We'll be glad to send it to you.
Sure. Thanks.
Hang right on. Okay, fine. I'll ask Dale to pick up the telephone number, the address on for Arlene, so we can send her the January newsletter. That's the one that deals with the Illuminati. And if you're out there, we have time for one more call here at Radio Liberty at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and it's always a challenge when your guest doesn't show up and you've got to sort of wing it. Fortunately, we have a lot of callers out across America who did call in, and makes it a little easier for us. But there's so many issues that really need to be addressed today. And fortunately, we have the opportunity with this voice that God has given us to reach out across America. And our program, of course, will be on satellite. We're hoping we can get more and more stations to pull down. Our evening program, which is 8 to 10 here in the West Coast, 11 to 1 on the East Coast, but it can be heard over most of the United States, at least a time that isn't too bad. 10 to 12 Central is not a bad time. There are a lot of people who will listen there. And, of course, it's available on shortwave. So what you can do to help us is tell others about our programs. And tell them about our internet site, RadioLiberty.com, where people can listen to us 5 hours a day and not get very much of anything accomplished. But and then when they get tired of listening 5 hours a day, they can go to the archives and hear the previous programs. And, of course, they can... tell others is the big problem. A big thing that they can do, record our programs. You could tape them if you want to, or if you want to get our tapes, that you can copy those. But you'd be amazed at how often I get calls from people who said, well, so-and-so gave me one of your tapes or one of your videos, and suddenly I began to realize what was happening. And I know that a lot of people call and they say, well, I tell people that they don't want to hear. Well, that's their problem. That's not yours. But for every person who does that, there may be to be four or five that don't want to hear, but there'll be one who does. And the greatest gift you can give to anybody today is to introduce them to the truth, to an understanding of what's happening, and, of course, make them aware of the very real spiritual battle in which we're involved. Some people have had their lives changed listening to our programs. They've come to know the Lord personally. In fact, we had a gentleman over in Australia who was a Crowleyite. He was into Aleister Crowley, and, you know, it was wonderful to carry on a correspondence with him, and eventually he became a Christian, and the last thing we heard, he was going off to a Bible school to become a minister. Well, what a privilege it is to lead somebody that I've never met to the Lord simply by radio. And when you're part of our ministry, why, you become part of our effort to reach out and part of whatever accomplishments we can make along that line. So, you know, if you, of course, would like to know more about my ministry and where we are coming from, you can always give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. I would be glad to send you our newsletters, send you certainly our catalog. And, of course, you can begin to understand the source of our Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is the time when I have to remind our listeners out across America and here in the Central Coast of California that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent on those of you who agree that there's a problem and can afford to support us. And I know a lot of people are having real problems financially now, but if you are somebody who still has a job and you believe that we have a message, it's important. We hope that many of you will be willing to consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And to do that, if you'd like, all you have to do is pick up your telephone and call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, they'll tell you what needs to be done. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, perhaps our January newsletter, which goes into the Illuminati, or our December newsletter, which goes into why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools, we'll be glad to send you one of those newsletters. Of course, we do hope that maybe you want to subscribe to the newsletter to help defray the cost. We have, we probably send 150 to 200 copies into the prisons across America because we need to do something to counter the fact that the Muslims, the black Mohammedans are in the prisons recruiting prisoners, both black and white, but predominantly black, into this, what I believe is truly a demonic religion, that is the Muslim religion. And, of course, they are filling people not with love but with hate. So if you'd like, of course, to become part of our team or subscribe to our newsletter, why, we'd love to hear from you. And then, of course, we hope that you, as I said earlier, will make a point to tell others about our program. At least tell one or two people every day. You have our permission to copy our newsletter, to copy our tapes, to copy our videos, and help to disseminate them to people. And if we can get them listening, why, hopefully we can convince them what we're really up against. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will be interested in the video we have. It's called Diaprax in the Church. It's the story of the church growth movement. We have a four-tape set on the Church Growth Movement. It's called The Church Growth Movement. And when you get that, of course, you get a certain amount of literature with it. And we hope that this will then begin to help you understand what's going on. Of course, we suggest people go to Barrett Chose's website, crossroad.to. That's crossroad.to, T-O for Tonga. And Barrett has a lot of great information there. But we have a real problem in the Protestant church, so don't spend all our time worrying about the Catholics. We better be worried about the fact that we're bringing music into our church that I think is Luciferian. I believe the beat of this music is certainly not healthy at all for the body or for the soul. And if we can bring that sort of music into the church, what about the message, the new message that's coming with the church growth movement? As we change the attitude and perspective towards God, and as they begin using psychological techniques on people who don't have any psychological problems, at least not before, they get into the diaprax, the consensus mode of the Hegelian dialectic, which is the very basis of this transformational movement, which is sweeping the Protestant church today. Again, the video, Diaprax in the Church, the four-tape set, the Church Growth Movement, the new video called Megiddo, The March to Armageddon, my video, The Brotherhood of Darkness, which is must viewing for anybody who wants to understand the spiritual battle and we're engaged in, and then, of course, to understand the war, Iraq, The Untold Story, the video or the syllabus or preferably both of them together. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because if we don't turn back as a nation to God, why, I believe that God's judgment is going to fall on this nation. And then we ask you to pray for our leaders, our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow evening, we'll be with you once again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.